All right. And then that brings us up to Jason Bane versus Raven, the match with the most long A sounds in recorded history, Jason Bane and Raven. this is the $100,000 bounty that Raven is trying to collect on Jason Bane, thanks to Aaron Maguire and Mr.
Yes.
Brink Security.
Yes. And yeah, this ended up being the mid-main event.
Mm-hmm.
So, unbeknownst to most of the fans.
Right.
So, yeah, Raven comes down, cuts a promo, runs down Ohio, runs down the fans for being a bunch of idiots. Bane swipes the mic away from him finally at some juncture and chews into Raven and says the fans are great.
Okay.
You know, because that's what your baby face needs to do.
That's what a guy with a black flag tattoo needs to do, is pander to the crowd.
Yes.
Yeah.
it was a garbage match. It was a Ravens rules match.
Ah, okay.
Kendo sticks, signs.
Yeah.
Garbage lids.
Yeah.
You know, there were chairs. I guess that was the one thing that Raven set Bane up for the drop toe hold.
Oh yeah.
And Bane actually reversed it and did it to Raven. And I don't think Raven actually got it off on him at any later juncture of the match.
Okay.
Well, at some point, which was kind of strange, because there's no DQ in a Ravens rules match, if I'm correct.
That should be correct, yep.
Well, it was kind of funny, because at some juncture, Mr. Brinks, who looks like a rather large fellow, but
uh-huh.
he's never wrestled, and he's not on camera very much.
Okay.
He sneaks into the ring while Raven is distracting the referee, and
uh-huh.
he speared Jason Bane.
Uh-huh.
Raven's like, oh, okay, time to pin him. So the ref, tries to count. Bane kicks out. What the hell happened after that? Oh, yeah, the old ref bump.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and Jason Bane's, he has two finishers, really. He has the Bane line, which is kind of the old take on the Steiner line.
Okay.
Although I guess they never really used that for a finisher, did they?
It depended. I mean, I'm sure they probably squashed some jobbers with the Steiner line.
Yeah, okay. So, anywho, yeah, he kind of uses it as kind of a finisher. Since the ref was down, you get the phantom count.
Yeah.
He gets up, something tricky happened to distract him or something like that. Raven gets in the DDT.
Yep.
He kicks out after two. Raven gets frustrated. He ends up putting a second Bane line on him. And then he gets the count of three so that Raven does not collect the full $100,000, because at least from what Aaron Maguire said before the match, only half of the money had been transferred into Raven's account, and the other half was upon completion of the job of ridding Pro Wrestling Ohio of Jason Bane.
Well, that's just good business out of Raven. You really should take half up front. It's like when Styx and REO Speedwagon plays the state fair, they always take half up front just in case something happens and they can't make it. In case of an act of God, you've at least got half of your money in the bank already.
Yes, that was smart on his part.
Yeah. Oh, very nice. So was it worth bringing in Raven? I'll just ask that question flat out.
I don't know. Like, as noted, since this was an intermission and a lot of people left after it,
yeah.
You could make the argument that a lot of people came for him.
Sure.
So you might say that it was worth bringing him in because, yeah, they left Hacksaw Jim Duggan on the table. They left the championship match on the table.
Okay.
So you'd have to say yes. He did not stick around for the meet and greet because, at least as far as I know, he had a 7:40 flight out. And considering that The event probably wrapped up or a little bit after 6:30.
Yeah.
And the airport is not exactly downtown.
Yeah.
You know, if he indeed had a 7:40 flight, his ass needed to get moving.
Yeah, really.
So
fair
I can't,
enough.
You know, and he seemed to be nice enough. I thought he was going to stick around, but he said hi to some people, some of the kids on their way into where they're having the aftermath of VIP party.
Okay.
So, you know, he seemed pleasant enough. Oh, there was that. And he also thanked the crowd. Like, he said, oh, it's great that you're coming out to, you know, an independent show.
Yeah.
And said that, you know, the fans were great. Thanks for having me. So, I mean, you know, he didn't need to do that at all.
Mm-hmm. But that's good.
So, yeah, it was cool of him to do that after the match. And, oh, and I forgot, one of the sights after the match was Aaron McGuire being beat up by both Raven and Jason Bane, because he kind of gave Raven a little bit of hell after the match for not finishing the job.
Yeah.
So he attacked him, and Bane attacked him, and he ended up being in a bra and some sequined panties.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yes.
Oh, that's some good Vince McMahon humor right there.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yep, so that happened, and Bane, his other finisher is the F5, and that's what finally kind of put the whole McGuire in women's clothing out of our misery.
God.
Really, the beatdown probably lasted a good couple of 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay.
He finally F5s McGuire, and Raven and Bane walk out of the ring together.
Okay.
And honestly, I don't know where Mr. Brinks was, but I think Mr. Brinks should get some hell for not helping out his manager a little bit more.
Yeah, I should say so. Isn't the whole point of calling him Brinks that he's security?
Yeah, one would think.
What a jerk.
Yeah, what he is getting paid too much money if it's more than 0 cents. Huh?
Yeah, nice. All right, the next match you have listed on your Michael Facade versus Crimson. I'm assuming this is Michael Facade.
Yes.
Okay. Who sat in for Super Hentai?
Yeah, and Super Hentai was trained. They always mentioned that he was trained in Hayabusa, Japan. And he also was one of the trainers of Mr. Facade. So that is just another reason to tie in the whole ninja gimmick.
Right.
And, you know, he was trained by someone that was trained in the Far East.
Sure. By the looks of these guys, though, on the PWO website, Super Hentai has the kind of martial arts / delirious mask going on. Crimson, though,
yes.
I can't tell if he's, like, a juggalo or if he is a fan of the Joker or Alkaline Trio or what exactly his gimmick is, other than the fact that he's just like a...
Alkaline Trio wears a face paint?
Sometimes they do, actually. I mean, in this picture, he's wearing a red dress shirt with a black vest and a silver tie, and that's kind of along the lines of what they would wear in concert. But they've been known to wear, like, eye makeup and stuff like that.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that is pretty much his getup. He kind of has, you know, like a vest-type deal on and, you know, a shirt underneath. He doesn't normally have the tie on,
okay.
But it does kind of look like that. And, you know,
and
black pants.
Alkaline Trio has an album called Crimson, too. So if I'm onto something, this guy owes me a Coke. I don't know. he looks more like a guy who would owe somebody Coke.
Well, allegedly that is possible. I am unsure one way or the other.
Well, a rumor has it, but that's because I just said it 10 seconds ago. I think I started that rumor just now.
Yes. So, yeah, Facade obviously was not scheduled for the match.
Right.
And he again seemed off, and it was not all that terribly long of a match. Crimson won in fairly short order.
Okay.
Which I think is acceptable. Facade's team got the win earlier. He's not really losing too much. They had brought Crimson in as a bit of a destroyer, mm-hmm. and they had showcased him as such during the season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hard to fault them for how that turned out.
Yeah.
Even though Facade is probably one of the more popular, he'd be below Johnny Gargano for sure, but I would say he's no worse than the third most popular guy in the company.
Oh, cool. So a fair substitution.
Yeah, so it's a fair substitution. Everybody gets to see somebody that they like again. and he gets to, you know, do a little more in-ring action, more of his in-ring action than he really did during the six-man tag.
Sure.
So, yeah, fair enough. Facade still seemed a little off, but the match was okay for, you know, its length.
Okay, cool. And speaking of six-man tags, as you did a second ago, another six-man tag followed. This is the breakup of Team Clash. This is Brian Bender leading the Puerto Rican Wrecking Crew against Ernie Balls, Corey Winters, and Eric Ryan. This was an elimination match. How was this match? Did it bring some resolution at Resolution to the Team Clash feud?
Yes, it did. They turned it into, unless I misheard something, they turned it into an elimination-style match at the event itself.
Because
I was under the impression that it was just going to be a six-man tag.
Yeah.
So, not too shockingly, a bit shockingly, I suppose, Eric Ryan, mm-hmm. and this is another one where Kevin sees this happen, he goes, ooh, I need to type this into my phone.
Right.
Eric Ryan takes, I believe it was, Isaac Montana is the smaller of the two of the Puerto Rican Wrecking Crew. Mm-hmm. He DVDs them into the lowest turnbuckle.
Ooh,
and
okay.
It looked brutal.
It sounds brutal.
Yeah. So he DVDs them into the lowest turnbuckle, pulls them out from the ropes. He gets the pin. As I'm going, wow, that was wild. I need to remember that.
Yeah.
As I'm punching that in, Luis Diamante gets eliminated in the meantime. I look up and I'm like, what the fuck just happened? I'm not taking copious notes. I mean, I wrote no more than the sentence that I just said, like DVD and corner turnbuckle or something, was about all I typed into my phone. So it happened pretty quickly. So he gets eliminated. And then Brian Bender is the only one left on his team.
Okay.
He ends up eliminating. He rock bottoms, and he does use the rock bottom on a fairly regular basis.
Okay.
He rock bottoms Eric Ryan at some juncture. He's eliminated. Corey Winters does his finisher once. Ernie Balls tells him to do it again. He does it again. And then Ernie Balls tells him to do it a third time. And Corey Winters is like, fuck off. You keep on having us lose, which really was – there are two things that let me finish this thought first. So he gets all pissed off at Ernie Balls and just leaves ringside.
Okay.
Eliminates himself. Well, the whole gimmick, the match was kind of weird because there wasn't any clear heel or face, really.
Okay.
The Puerto Rican Wrecking Crew had been babyface, but they had been spotty on TV at best.
Uh-huh.
And Brian Bender, they didn't really establish one way or the other that he had gone. They were a heel tag team, as noted very earlier. They took on Neidhart and Greg the Hammer.
Right.
For the tag belts last year, so, you know, you've got to be bad when you're taking on legends.
Of course.
Ball, and during the season, Ernie Balls broke his leg, literally. So that was part of the reason why the Team Clash broke up. But then they decided to write kind of the breakup in there. Well, they didn't do enough until kind of the last month or so to work up this feud. So there was no clear-cut face or heel, but you did establish that everybody lost a lot that was involved in this match. And so it made it a bit of a problem in rooting interest and in just interest.
Oh, no. Okay, that's too bad.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, we're down to Team Clash, you know, to end the match. So you do get some resolution, and it came quite clear when Bender gives Balls the RKO, Diamond Cutter, whatever you want to call it, for the victory. And, you know, he celebrates. And he is, he's more in shape. He's probably the bigger of the two guys. Maybe not quite as good in the microphone as Ernie Balls is, but I've never thought that they gave him a whole lot of time either.
Okay.
One way or the other. Like, I think he's been adequate, at least, when they have given him a microphone.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see how they go forward with that, if they keep him as a singles wrestler, or if, because the broken leg evidently has healed, because Burnt Balls once, you know, wrestle some.
Sure.
If they decide to kind of put them back together to have another tag team sticking around.
Yeah. Now, here's something else of note to me. It's probably only interesting to me. On the PWO wrestling website, the picture for this six-man tag team match, five of them are wearing bandanas. I want to know who the guy is who's not wearing a bandana. He's on Ernie Ball's team, and he's got, like, shaggy brown hair and a beard.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have the shaggy hair anymore. He pretty much has not a shaved head. He is probably trimming it at two or something like that.
Okay.
So he just has short, very short hair now and still the beard, and that's Corey Winters.
Corey Winters, I beg of you, go to Walmart, spend $2, and get a bandana. Because one of these things is not like the others. I want to see a rematch of this match at Resolution 4, and I want all six of these guys to have bandanas.
Yeah, and, you know, I just looked at my notes here, too. I've forgotten one thing of interest. Well, it could be of interest going into next season. After Eric Ryan was pinned, Crimson came out for no reason whatsoever. Well, actually, he had wrestled Brian Bender a couple of times, and that was one of the reasons that they had gotten Crimson over as the Destroyer, because Bender's a pretty big guy, and Crimson put a pretty decent hurting on him both times.
Okay.
Well, so Bender was obviously in the ring. He's the only one left on his team. He's kind of cowering in the corner, and Ryan's down on the mat. Well, Crimson beats him up a little bit more after he had already, you know, been eliminated, and then carries him to the back. So I think there may be another mentor-type situation going on with him next year.
Okay.
I would hope that that sets up something, you know, going into the future. But you know, only time will tell.
Yep, gotcha.
With that
right.
One.
Yeah. let's see, three matches left on this show. Tag team titles and a no disqualification match. Sex Appeal, two of the ugliest guys I've seen with a name like that since Beautiful Bobby and Loverboy Dennis, taking on the Homeless Handicap Connection. Two guys who look like Necro Butcher, one of whom looks like he's got walrus pox, but that is neither here nor there. No disqualification, and the tag team titles change hands. Oh boy, speaking, though, of handicapped, we have a special guest in this match.
Yes, we do. Gregory Iron is the obviously the handicapped of the two there. Hobo Joe, I think, is pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Which part of it he is. So he has Bell's palsy, so he just kind of has a useless right hand.
Okay.
So, A, my buddy Sean and I must have had his family in front of us, because the only time the old people in front of us stood up was for this match, and they had a slew of Gregory Iron T-shirts.
Wow.
On their table, and a couple of them actually were being worn.
Now, can you imagine how you're a pretty even keeled guy? Can you imagine how miserable that would have been if it would have, instead of Kevin and Sean, it would have been Eric and Jeremy at this show? And the fucking homeless handicap connection comes out, and the family members of the handicap guy are sitting right in front of us. How fucking miserable would we have been for the next 20 minutes? We would have had to get up and go sit somewhere else.
Oh, it's quite possible.
I'm not trying to be mean to the guy. I'm just saying I'm being mean to us, if anything. Fuck, we're a couple of jerks.
Yeah, no, I was surprised. Trust me, Sean comes up with more than enough offensive material that I was surprised that it was not worse than was the case there. Wow, to just really top that off and just kind of to bring the whole handicap thing all around here. The match kind of, you know, no DQ. I thought it was going to be 3-on-2, but Nikki Valentino decided to stay out of the match for the most part. But when he, you know, they just kind of did some brawling outside of the ring. Iron was bleeding. I believe Hobo Joe ended up bleeding at some point. The two members of Sex Appeal did not blade at all, I believe.
Huh, okay.
I could be wrong.
They're not going to be... They're not going to be very sexy and appealing if they got gig marks all over their forehead.
Yeah, exactly. So they went ahead and, you know, they had kind of a fairly typical brawl. And then, yeah, the real interest hit when Nikki Valentino comes out. They kind of wave Valentino down.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally comes down. Well, before he can really even get into the ring, Zach Gowen, a surprise guest, shows up and whacks Valentino on the back with his cane before he can ever get into the ring.
Okay.
And there is somebody who I am quite sure was slow.
Uh-huh.
And he absolutely freaked out.
Oh boy.
When Zach Gowen came down to the ring.
Oh Lord.
I don't even want to say it, but like I had to turn away from laughing directly in his face.
Awesome. Okay, not to cut off your momentum, but why is it that the same thing happened at the indie show that I went to before the Wrestling Hall of Fame that weekend? A manager entered the ring and whopped somebody with a cane, and a slow guy from the audience got up and ran into the ring and tried to break everything up to the point where the referee had to wrestle him down, the trainers had to come in and pull the guy out of the ring. Should we just put a moratorium on ever using a cane in a wrestling match again? Because God forbid a handicapped person come into the ring and hurt themselves.
Oh, that would have been outstanding, because this guy, Sean got a picture of him. He's wearing this Spider-Man kind of Lycra t-shirt.
Uh-huh.
It almost feels bad to make fun of him, but God damn it, he's the one that put it on, so fuck
That's
him.
That's right, yeah. Jesus.
He just absolutely freaked out. And Gowen did a couple of spots. He did his moonsault off the top rope, which is quite impressive. Oh, and I forget. I think he whacked one of the guys from Sex Appeal with his leg, which also elicited quite an eruption out of our slow person in the crowd.
Yep. Wow.
And yeah, he ended up with the moon. He hits the moonsault, and I think Iron does the stunner for his finisher. They call it the destabler.
Okay.
And I don't think he really has a finisher. he does have a signature move, which is the pit stop, which is the Miz's clothesline, except he puts his armpit into the person's face.
Yeah, pity city like the Nasty Boys.
Yep. So, okay. Yeah, he kind of combines the Nasty Boys with the Miz with that kind of jump through clothesline type action.
Cool. I like it, yeah.
So, yeah, but I didn't see him do that as part of the end, but one of them, and it was kind of hard to tell because Iron's family was kind of going crazy, and, and we had Slow Guy going a little crazy beside us, too. So I didn't see who actually got the pinfall, but Iron and Hobo Joe are your new Pro Wrestling Ohio Tag Team Champions.
The feel-good moment of the year.
Yeah, the feel-good moment of the year. And I guess it was kind of nice. Like, Hobo Joe kept on having people turn on him, and things always seemed... Oh, no, he won his match last year.
Okay.
At Resolution, because it was him and Bane against the Gambinos in a dumpster match last year.
Oh, jeez. Oh, Hobo Joe got homesick.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to go through that whole storyline, but it fit in with the storyline.
Okay.
So, oh my gosh. And that was the other thing, is that we have Iron's family in front of us. Well, we have this idiot behind us, too, who cannot stop making Timmy from South Park jokes.
Of course.
And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, I will shout Timmy every now and again when I deem it appropriate, but when you, the match, I would say, was probably between 15 and 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're sitting or standing in front of someone doing Timmy jokes for about 10 out of those 15 to 20 minutes, you want to murder the person.
Well, there's the length of time that you're saying it. That's annoying as it is. You could say anything and it would be annoying after 20 minutes. But Timmy hasn't been funny since Rick James, bitch. I mean, it ceased to be funny when everyone was yelling about Rick James. That was 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, South Park has pretty much kept him off of TV because they realized the bit was done and over with.
Yep, they've moved on.
You know, and even when he's on, they do not really give him even a Timmy. You know, they kind of just have him in the crowd, and that's about it.
Yep, that's right.
That was that. They celebrated. Everybody was happy.
Good.
Yeah, and everything
Glad
was cool.
All right. Well, speaking of Timmies and slow people, Hacksaw Jimmy Duggan wrestled this next match against some bozo with a mustache. What the hell is going on with this Fontaine character? He's
got to
be comedy. He's comedy, right?
Yeah, he was comedy. They had given him, he was partnered with a fellow named Macho Grosh his first year, who was kind of a cross-dressing idiot. And then last year he was part of, he led Fontaine's Freaks in an elimination style match, which was him, a white guy who was supposedly Samoan, but they billed him as being from Hawaii or something like that, and I'm like, it's one or the other here, kids. You can't be Samoan and be from Hawaii. If you're Samoan, you're from fucking Samoa.
Yeah, that guy was just doughy anyway.
Yeah, and making him white really did not help out. So it's Naj, the wild Samoan, and then he also had Kid Cupid, who was a 300 to 400 pound gentleman with a beard and not an iota of good looks. And it was Gregory Iron against Sex Appeal and somebody else. I believe that was the match last year. This year, Fontaine just pretty much freaked out and said that you gave me shitty gimmicks. I'm doing my own thing this year. And I didn't remember this. I mentioned in the preview, he either got a lot better on the mic or he just really felt like he could sink into this.
Okay.
And he really did on the microphone. Like, he was probably the best person on the mic in the company this past season.
That's cool, considering he looks like a... I can't even think of a word to use to describe what this guy looks like.
He's a beanpole. I would say he's, yeah, he's at least 6 foot, because he was certainly taller than me, and I can also say that at the VIP meeting afterwards, I did talk to him, and there will be an interview with him at some juncture on Stunt Granny.
That's awesome.
So, and he was quite nice, and not to get too much into it, but he just said it was pretty surreal wrestling Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh, I'm sure, considering Marion Fontaine's twin brother is the 2x4. It seriously looks like Hacksaw Jim Duggan wrestled a piece of plywood that he drew a mustache on.
Yeah, and he kind of brought up something that I don't always think about. And it did. He said he was only 24.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, A, you're a decade younger than me, so I can't believe that you remember much of Hacksaw Jim Duggan on TV, honestly.
Yeah.
And then B, you know, I just saw that Dolph Ziggler just had his 30th birthday.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where sometimes you forget that some of these guys are wrestling on the indies at a fairly young age. Like, there aren't a whole lot of guys that get into the WWE at, like, that 24 age or anything like that.
No, back in the territory days, if you were in WWE when you were 28, you know, you were ahead of the curve. And nowadays, 28 seems to pretty much be the curve. It seems like it anyway. Like, you know, a guy like Cabana came in, he was probably about 28, but shit, he'd been around for 10 years.
Right.
You know, Dolph was around 5 years ago. That would have made him 25. That's a little young, on average, I would say.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, that was one of those things I'm like, wow, you know, I guess I just didn't always think about their ages sometimes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, these guys are kind of young.
Yeah.
So that made for you know, a bit of an interest, and like, I mean, he kind of even made fun of himself a little bit. He goes, you know, who thinks this scrawny kid's gonna beat Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who's even twice his age?
Right.
Or more than twice his age, because you know, for being an older gentleman, Jim is in fairly good shape. I mean, I would rather look at his less. His boobs are less saggy than Ric Flair's, let's say.
And he probably still looks like he could beat somebody up in a bar fight if he wanted to.
Yeah. And, you know, he came out, and I think I've already mentioned it here. There was someone that literally, they had brought an American flag just for him, and there was someone else that I ended up seeing waving an American flag who was down on, you know, the main floor area. And I think there was even a third flag somewhere. Everyone's hoeing. Everyone's chanting USA.
Yep.
I mean, that guy just had everybody going. So, you can't even rough the guy up. And that, and they said, everybody that I seemed to talk to said that he was a very nice guy in the back. You could talk to him. You know, he didn't act like an ass clown or anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, from all accounts, Hacksaw is a very nice guy.
Cool.
And and really, even at the VIP meeting afterwards, even like these kids that were probably like 8 and 10 now just were going crazy to go meet him. Because like Sean at least grew up watching Hacksaw some, so he was actually kind of fired up to see him wrestle.
Yeah, Duggan has pretty much done nothing on television during the lifetimes of these 8 and 10-year-old kids, yet he's still able to just like spark their interest.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, yeah, and it was kind of funny. Sean wanted to try and get a picture with him, which was cracking me up. Like, he was the only person that had any interest whatsoever.
Oh, no.
to Sean, at least. So that was kind of amusing. So, yeah, even, like, a non-fan like him, like, he is not really a wrestling fan. The only time he watches wrestling is when I'm like, dude, there's nothing else on my DVR. I need to watch this, so I'm going to make you watch wrestling.
Nice.
So,
in summary, Hacksaw Jim Duggan was worth bringing in.
Yeah, for sure.
cool.
You know, there were definitely people there for him. And the match was, there's a lot of hoeing, a lot of stalling, a lot of, not a lot of action.
Sure.
And Jim Duggan gives him the 3-point stance at some juncture, the shoulder tackle for the victory. It was pretty short and painless, and, you know, everybody in the crowd seemed to enjoy it.
Good. That's awesome. All right, and the main event of the evening, M-Dog 20, Matt Cross, who was recently on WWE TV. I can't remember if it was on Superstars or SmackDown or what it was, but I know Matt Stryker knew who he was.
Yes, he was. I believe it's Superstars because I caught that, and I meant to mention it at some juncture, but forgot to.
Yep, I think that he might have wrestled with somebody against Vance Archer and Kurt Hawkins, if I remember right, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah, I believe you are correct.
Okay, so yeah, Matt Cross takes on. Matt Cross. No, go ahead.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's been around. He was on Hogan's tour of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's wrestled some in Ring of Honor.
Oh, yeah, he has. He was in some early Ring of Honor shows. He was the high-flying guy who was actually kind of polished and kind of a character in the old Backyard Wrestling tapes that came out in, like, 1999 and 2000. I mean, M-Dog 20 has been around for a long time.
Yeah, and if it's to believe, I mean, he says it all the time. Like, he was part of, he was, like, the taxi squad for the U.S. Olympic gymnastic team.
Oh, cool.
Or something like that, or, like, he was one of the last guys cut or something like that. So, yeah, like, he has some real credibility to his name.
Yep.
As far as athleticism goes. And he certainly showed that. Because it was not billed as a no DQ match or any special stipulations.
Mm-hmm.
But that match spilled onto the floor and through the crowd in a fairly quick manner. Like,
yeah.
I don't even know if they wrestled for a couple of minutes before this thing went into the crowd.
Gotcha.
So they kind of did a tour of Nautica, and there is this walkway in between the main set of stands that I was talking about early on here and
mm-hmm.
this set of stands, well, actually both sets of stands. There's a walkway there that there's also a little bit of seating.
Mm-hmm.
He actually jumped up to it from a table.
Okay.
And pulled him. Keep there, you've got to have slats on the fences so that you can't, you know, fit a baby head through it.
Right.
Okay, I'm dorking out architecture-wise, but, you're not supposed to be able to fit a 4-inch baby head through them, so you've got to have some type of vertical member.
And God knows I've tried.
Yeah. To a railing like that in a public place, you know, in a house, you could get away with it, but in a public place, you can't have any more than 4 inches from center line to center line of, like a dowel.
Yeah.
So he jumps, I think, I'm assuming, from a table because it looked like Gargano was going to repeat something they had done last year to Josh Prohibition, which
mm-hmm.
is come off of that area with a splash through a table.
Yeah.
Well, Cross jumped up and grabbed onto one of the vertical stiles and pulled himself up to that location.
Wow.
Which was pretty impressive. I mean, it was hard to, from the stage, it was hard to see over there because, you know, the crowd was going with them.
Yeah.
And Matt Cross and Gargano are not any taller than myself.
Mm-hmm.
At 5'9", so, you know, they don't exactly stand out in a crowd.
Right.
So, didn't see much of the other action, and then also kind of going back to Cross being really athletic, there are the tension cables holding down, holding up and holding down the canvas that is the roof.
Oh, yeah.
To Nautica. Well, you know, it's going at a decent 45-degree angle. At some juncture, he shimmied up the rope about halfway or so and then dropped down onto Gargano, I think. Again, there was a bit of a viewing issue there.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So he dropped down after that. So it was kind of neat to see him do that. But again, viewing was kind of hard for me. Even when I stood up on a chair, it was still kind of tough to see.
Yeah.
But after that, they got back into the ring, and I think, yeah, I said it way back at the beginning. I think quality-wise, like when they finally got back into the ring, I think it was a bit better of an in-ring match than last year. And Josh Prohibition had been around for quite some time and had done a bunch of indie stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
But Cross and Gargano, because Gargano is also in Evolve. Or at least
he wrestled
their first card.
Yep.
And he acted, him and Benjamin Boone at some juncture were, they were security for someone on the WWE, for the WWE when they were in Cleveland. I don't know if it's Vince or, you know, somebody had gotten beaten up. And they act as security for him at some juncture. So they've all, you know, they're big enough that they at least get the call.
Yeah.
When the WWE's in town, if they need somebody.
Right.
After this, so they're back in the ring. At some point, Gargano had set up a table on the outside of the ring in the, outside the ring. At some juncture, Matt Cross is just kind of woozy on the ropes, and they finally took advantage of it. And Gargano spears him through the ropes, kind of doing a suicide dive type thing. And they went through the table, which got a good reaction out of everybody.
Yeah.
But then, you know, not much came of that because both of them were down on the ground. They get back up. Gargano hits his finisher. Cross kicks out. Cross hits, he does the shooting star press. Gargano kicks out. Then after that, Cross hits a bicycle kick after some wrangling. He hits a bicycle kick. Gets another two count out of it, gets frustrated, and then it gives Gargano enough time to recover, give him a little sweet chin music.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hits a second, he calls his finisher Uniquely You. Like, he gets them up, he kind of picks them up in a full Nelson position.
Okay.
And then he spins them and face plants them as he kind of falls back.
Oh, sure, yep.
He calls it Uniquely You. So he hits that for the second time. He gets the three count, and the crowd goes home, you know. Send the crowd home happy. The good guy wins the main event.
Yeah.
And I would say, all told, the match was probably in the 30-minute area.
Wow.
Including
all the brawling outside.
Yeah, there's probably about 10 minutes of brawling and about 20 minutes in the ring or so.
Cool.
I'd say 10, well, at least 10 to 15 in the ring. Cause it was kind of tough to judge. I was just judging from when I saved my notes in my phone as to when one ended and when the next began.
Yeah.
Because my notes, yeah, the save time is the last time you've saved it. So, yeah. So that was my best guess at how long it was. I didn't, you know, hold a stopwatch to it or anything like that.
Right. Well, it sounds like a credible main event for an indie show, especially one that can draw 2,000 people. Those two in a half-hour wrestling match sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, yeah, it was a good finale to the day.
Cool. Any after party happenings of note besides Sean marking out over Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Marion Fontaine promising you an interview in the future?
Well, hey, I even got his business card, so I'm good to go. I actually have his phone number, so he cannot wiggle away from me.
Good, he's being called out right now.
Yeah, no, not too much. I talked to Aaron McGuire for a little bit.
Yeah.
That was about it. They didn't really. It didn't seem like as many people came over as quickly. this year as they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Raven had to leave early. So, like, as I was going into the bar where they held it, and they held it at the same location last year, Raven was just on his way out. Jason Bain stuck around for a little bit, but I didn't really talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying, those, Bobby Shield, well, yeah, Sex Appeal showed up at some juncture, but I waited like 45 minutes, and it was time to get back to Columbus. It was, by the time I talked to Fontaine and McGuire, it had been, it got to be almost 7:30. Okay. And considering it's a 2.5 hour trip back here, it was time to get back.
Sure.
And, you know, get shit in order to go to work today.
Right. Definitely. But overall positive experience from Pro Wrestling Ohio?
Yeah. No, they have held a pretty solid event 2 years running. You know, I always kind of leave it as an unsaid thing. Like, if I wanted to get super picky or something like that, I'm sure I could call people out on more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, go, oh, you know, these guys aren't as sharp as the WWE guys. But I kind of let that kind of be there, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, there's a kind of a reason. But, you know, they bust their asses and they work hard and they provide solid entertainment in my book. So I don't see any reason not to continue to, you know, do the reviews and try to help them out a little bit. Their viewership has gone up quite a bit this year, so... You know, because I think last I had heard, their viewership had quadrupled from last year, and they were getting a lot of people from Canada were watching because they're on satellite, and a lot of people, oddly of all places, in California, too.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I think Australia at some juncture.
Interesting.
They are getting some demographic from there, so, you know,
okay.
I guess... That is the upside to being on satellite.
Oh, yeah. Branching out internationally. Very cool.
Yeah. So that's, you know, it's a good product. And, I haven't had any problems the last 2 years. If I needed to talk to somebody, they have been more than happy. They were all, you know, the people that did show up by the time I got out of there were signing autographs and talking to fans and taking pictures with them and everything. So, you know, there wasn't anybody that was, you know, a real ass or, you know, just, you know, maybe just because people didn't show up, you could give them a hard time. But, I mean, I didn't stay there. I think it was the after party was supposed to be until about 9 o'clock or something of the sort.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a long night for you.
Yeah, no, I was not about to stay up there that long.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, yeah, positive overall experience, and considering that, what is it, like, the VIP package is $40.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's a great price.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're in the area, it's kind of hard to argue, you know, getting 3.5 hours entertainment. You know, you get a band. But the band was a little bit better this year than last year, too.
Okay.
They're no hold for Swank, but...
oh, yeah, they'll be better next year, trust me.
When we
cash in the bounty on Jason Bain, and that way we can afford to get out to Cleveland and play Resolution.
Oh, man. So, yeah, this audio has gone a smidge longer than we expected.
That's all right. We can wrap up now. We'll break this into parts, possibly. Or, fuck them, they can download the whole thing. But
well, I think it'd be advisable, hopefully, that we break this into two parts.
Okay,
if humanly possible. I'm looking at looking at my phone and realizing that it's been nearly 2 hours.
Yeah, really. So, hey, where else can you spend $40 to get 3.5 hours of wrestling action and 2 hours of audio? Nowhere but Pro Wrestling Ohio and Stunt Granny, a winning tag team.
Exactly. So cool. With that, I cannot come up with a cheesier line. I think that's year out. I will say I may go enjoy one of my tasty beverages that my fine brother who just got married brought me. He got me a six-pack of microbrews from Colorado. It's time to bust those puppies open. Thanks for listening to the Pro Wrestling Podcast, Pro Wrestling Ohio podcast. And I'll try to do better next time.